And so they practiced. They didn't have lunch, but headed for a free classroom, where Harry tried with all his might to make various objects fly across the room towards him. He was still having problems. The books and quills kept losing heart halfway across the room and dropping like stones to the floor. "Concentrate, Harry! Concentrate! What do you think I'm trying to do?" said Harry angrily. "A filthy great dragon keeps popping up in my head for some reason. Okay, try again." He wanted to skip divination to keep practising, but Hermione refused point-blank to skive off arithmancy, and there was no point staying without her. He therefore had to endure over an hour of Professor Trelawney, who spent half the lesson telling everyone that the position of Mars in relation to Saturn at that moment meant that people born in July were in great danger of sudden, violent deaths. "Well, that's good," said Harry loudly, his temper getting the better of him. "Just as long as it's not drawn out. I don't want to suffer." Ron looked for a moment as though he was going to laugh. He certainly caught Harry's eye for the first time in days, but Harry was still feeling too resentful towards Ron to care. He spent the rest of the lesson trying to attract small objects towards him under the table with his wand. He managed to make a fly zoom straight into his hand, though he wasn't entirely sure that was owing to his prowess at summoning charms. Perhaps the fly was just stupid. He forced down some dinner after divination, then returned to the empty classroom with Hermione, using the invisibility cloak to avoid the teachers. They kept practising until past midnight. They would have stayed longer, but Peeves turned up, and pretending to think that Harry wanted things thrown at him, started chucking chairs across the room. Harry and Hermione left in a hurry before the noise attracted Filch, and went back to the Gryffindor common room, which was now mercifully empty. At 2 o'clock in the morning, Harry stood near the fireplace, surrounded by heaps of objects. Books, quills, several upturned chairs, an old set of gobstones, and Neville's toad, Trevor. Only in the last hour had Harry really got the hang of the summoning charm. "That's better, Harry. That's loads better," Hermione said, looking exhausted but very pleased. "Well, now we know what to do next time I can't manage a spell," Harry said, throwing a rune dictionary back to Hermione so he could try again. "Threaten me with a dragon!" "Right!" He raised his wand once more. "Axio Dictionary!" The heavy book soared out of Hermione's hand, flew across the room, and Harry caught it. "Harry, I really think you've got it," said Hermione delightedly. "Just as long as it works tomorrow," Harry said. "The firebolt's going to be much further away than the stuff in here. It's going to be in the castle, and I'm going to be out there in the grounds." "That doesn't matter," said Hermione firmly. "Just as long as you're concentrating really, really hard on it, it'll come. Harry, we'd better get some sleep. You're going to need it." Harry had been focusing so hard on learning the summoning charm that evening that some of his blind panic had left him. It returned in full measure, however, on the following morning. The atmosphere in the school was one of great tension and excitement. Lessons were to stop at midday, giving all the students time to get down to the dragon's enclosure, though, of course, they didn't yet know what they would find there. Harry felt oddly separate from everyone around him, whether they were wishing him good luck or hissing, "We'll have a box of tissues ready, Potter," as he passed. It was a state of nervousness so advanced that he wondered whether he mightn't just lose his head when they tried to lead him out to his dragon and start trying to curse everyone in sight. Time was behaving in a more peculiar fashion than ever, rushing past in great dollops, so that one moment he seemed to be sitting down in his first lesson, History of Magic, and the next walking into lunch, and then, where had the morning gone, the last of the dragon-free hours? Professor McGonagall was hurrying over to him in the great hall. Lots of people were watching. "Potter, the champions have to come down into the grounds now. You have to get ready for your first task." "Okay," said Harry, standing up, his fork falling onto his plate with a clatter. "Good luck, Harry," Hermione whispered. "'You'll be fine.'
"'Here,' said Harry, in a voice that was most unlike his own. He left the great hall with Professor McGonagall. She didn't seem herself either. In fact, she looked nearly as anxious as Hermione. As she walked him down the stone steps and out into the cold November afternoon, she put her hand on his shoulder.
"'Now, don't panic,' she said. "'Just keep a cool head. We've got wizards on hand to control the situation if it gets out of hand. The main thing is just to do your best, and nobody will think any the worse of you. Are you all right?'
"'Yes,' Harry heard himself say.
"'Yes, I'm fine.'
She was leading him towards the place where the dragons were, around the edge of the forest. But when they approached the clump of trees behind which the enclosure would be clearly visible, Harry saw that a tent had been erected, its entrance facing them, screening the dragons from view.
"'You're to go in here with the other champions,' said Professor McGonagall, in a rather shaky sort of voice. "'And wait for your turn, Potter. Mr. Bagman is in there. He'll be telling you the procedure. Good luck.'
"'Thanks,' said Harry, in a flat, distant voice. She left him at the entrance of the tent. Harry went inside. Fleur Delacour was sitting in a corner on a low wooden stool. She didn't look nearly as composed as usual, but rather pale and clammy. Victor Crumb looked even surlier than usual, which Harry supposed was his way of showing nerves. Cedric was pacing up and down. When Harry entered, he gave him a small smile, which Harry returned, feeling the muscles in his face working rather hard, as though they had forgotten how to do it.
"'Harry, good-o!' said Bagman, happily, looking around at him. "'Come in, come in, make yourself at home!'
Bagman looked somehow like a slightly overblown cartoon figure, standing amid all the pale-faced champions. He was wearing his old wasp robes again.
"'Well, now we're all here. Time to fill you in!' said Bagman, brightly. "'When the audience has assembled, I'm going to be offering each of you this bag.'
He held up a small sack of purple silk and shook it at them,
from which you will each select a small model of the thing you are about to face. There are different, varieties, you see. And I have to tell you something else, too. Ah, yes, your task is to collect the golden egg.
Harry glanced around. Cedric had nodded once to show that he understood Bagman's words, and then started pacing around the tent again. He looked slightly green. Fleur Delacour and Crumb hadn't reacted at all. Perhaps they thought they might be sick if they opened their mouths. That was certainly how Harry felt. But they, at least, had volunteered for this.
And in no time at all, hundreds upon hundreds of pairs of feet could be heard passing the tent, their owners talking excitedly, laughing, joking.
Harry felt as separate from the crowd as if they were a different species. And then, it felt about a second later to Harry, Bagman was opening the neck of the purple silk sack.